From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, could we soon see troops on the streets of Chicago? Reports indicate that may be coming. We'll discuss it and also reaction to that idea and more on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Charlie Wheeler is off this week. Our panel includes two guests this week, Mawa Iqbal. She covers state government for WBEZ and Illinois Public Radio stations, and also Kent Redfield, Professor Emeritus at the University of Illinois Springfield. So thanks to both of you for joining us this week.
Good to be
thanks
here.
Thanks for having us.
Mawa, I'm going to start. I want to make clear to people we are recording this Friday morning, a little bit before noon. What do we know at this time? Because there seems to be a couple of things that could be ahead. National Guard troops to patrol streets under the banner of reducing crime. Also, there's a lot of talk of stepped up enforcement of immigration. The Department of Homeland Security could be bringing people in for that into the city of Chicago. So where do things stand here on a Friday morning heading into a Labor Day weekend?
Yeah, I mean, the city officials, you know, the elected officials here in Illinois are on high alert. That's for certain. You know, there's rumors circulating that, you know, that the National Guard and these troops will be rolled in, you know, Labor Day weekend, right? That everyone's going to be on holiday. You know, so this is the perfect time to have this operation commence. But as of now, it still seems like just at the threat level. We've been hearing about this for a while, right? You know, and Trump targeting Illinois and Chicago isn't anything new. You know, he's always had his eyes on the city and the state just because, you know, it's a Democrat controlled area. And the whole, like you said, the whole idea or the reason for it is to, quote unquote, combat crime. But, you know, Democrats are responding in kind, right? Like Pritzker had a press conference earlier this week. He was flanked by leaders of the city and then all these business and community leaders and members of the congressional delegation. And, you know, was very firm in his messaging to Trump to say, you know, you do not belong here. We don't want you here. Stay out of Chicago. And then you have Mayor Brandon Johnson, who, you know, also was saying that Chicago doesn't need over militarization. They don't need troops. They don't need over policing. We need investment in things like housing, mental health programs. So, you know, as of now, it seems like nothing has really happened yet. But there are talks, right? It's kind of everyone's sort of on edge and on high alert. There's also been, you know, reports that the federal government wants to use the suburban naval base, the Great Lakes Station, as like a staging ground for the National Guard. So it's just, you know, trying to, I guess, like address whatever is happening as it happens. But certainly it's definitely gotten a lot of people anxious and a lot of people scared, you know, just what could this mean for people just living and working in the city?
Well, you said there was a lot of talking going on, but apparently the talking's not happening between the White House or other federal officials and the leaders of the city or the state, because Pritzker said he had not been told anything. I believe Brandon Johnson said he'd not been in contact. Even the police right. chief of Chicago said he hadn't heard anything. So, I mean, that's why there seems to be so much uncertainty, because nobody really knows what's happening, right?
Right. And it's also one of those things like, you know, Trump at a press conference earlier in the week, too, was kind of waffling, right, from his earlier threats of deploying these troops to Chicago, where he said, you know, if Pritzker asks us, then we will. Obviously, Pritzker is not going to ask the federal government to deploy the National Guard to the city. So it's a lot of confusion, like you said, from these elected officials that they were saying that, you know, we just haven't heard anything from the White House. No one's asked us. No one's been in touch with us. No one's discussed, you know, anything related to the National Guard coming in. Of course, you know, we have Attorney General Kwame Raoul, who says that he's not afraid to launch litigation against Trump, that this would be probably litigation or lawsuit number 36 for his office. He says that he's filed 36 lawsuits already against the Trump administration for various executive actions. But yeah, that all, I guess, is to be seen. still.
Yeah, Kent, I want to get your thoughts on this, but also the legality of it. I mean, this is something, I guess, through the years when I've watched National Guard being called out for something like this, it's always done sort of in conjunction with a state or a city, you know, as far as what's happening here. That doesn't seem to be the case right now. And the governor even acknowledged there's not a lot he can do in advance to prevent this. He called it an unconstitutional intrusion if it occurs. But he did say they would do everything they could to stop it after the fact. So legally, I mean, they pretty much are going to have to wait and let the feds make their first move, right?
Historically, you've got really kind of two things, and then there's a contrast with what's going on in DC, because that's an entirely different situation. But you have had instances where you've had governors requesting the National Guard to come in to respond to riots, essentially. So that happened with the governor of California in Watts back in the 60s. And then you had a situation, that was both in Detroit and, in California and Detroit. So you have those kinds of situations where you're it's a response to, you know, some kind of crisis. And when you had the, the George Floyd incident, you know, the governor of, Minnesota said, no, we don't want the National Guard. And so, and they were not called in. You have had a couple of instances, and the most dramatic would be, Eisenhower sending the National Guard to desegregate Little Rock High School because the government was of the state and was refusing to enforce federal law. Kennedy did the same thing with desegregation of the University of Mississippi during his administration. And so, the feds can nationalize federalize is really the right word. They can federalize the National Guard in response to the governor's request to deal with a domestic situation, or if you've got a situation where the federal government is saying the state government or municipal government isn't enforcing the law, is denying people of their civil rights. And so that's where you get more into a situation where the president would federalize the National Guard, and that would take, that would be the Insurrection Act. What's confusing about this is the president goes in and does all of this in relation to Washington, D.C., but Washington, D.C. is not a state. It's, it's a federal district. And so he doesn't have to ask anybody's permission or essentially say, make some kind of legal case that there's an emergency. And the president also has authority to take over the police in the District of Columbia. So Trump would have to make a strong justification under the Insurrection Act. He would not be able to take over the Chicago police. That would be, everyone assumes, barred by the 10th Amendment to the state of the federal constitution. So it's a very different legal situation than what we see going on in the District of Columbia. But this would be a situation where if you had some action, you got a suit, then if you got a restraining order through an injunction, things would stop. If you couldn't get a restraining order, and this would take quite a while to get to the U.S. Supreme Court. So it's very unclear as to exactly how this would play out, or you can say, well, this is precedent, this way we've done it in the past. That hasn't had a lot of currency in terms of dealing with the last 6 months as we're wading through a lot of different cases about what is or isn't legitimate executive power.
the Trump administration talked about the need to do something like this because of crime. As was said, crime is actually down if you look at the latest statistics. Although, in fairness, most major cities, Chicago included, have had problems with violent crime in the past. Many also see a racial component to this. I mean, talk about that as far as what people are saying.
Yeah, so I mean, you have Mayor Brandon Johnson saying that, you know, the Trump administration targeting Chicago as a predominantly Black community, and Mayor Brandon Johnson himself is Black too. So there's targeting all these different, you know, Democratic cities that have like large Black and Latino populations. There certainly is a racial element too. But like you said, right, and at least in the city of Chicago, the crime statistics show, or city data shows, that crime has actually been going down. I think shootings were down like 30% and homicides were down 40% from the previous year. So it's been trending downwards. And, you know, it's come at a time where city leaders are wondering, right, like what's the right response? You know, like if the federal government is saying that you know, these Democrat run, these majority Black and brown cities are overrun with crime, is this just racist dog whistling, when in reality it's very different, that actually, you know, crime is being under control, and that the city is trying to invest in more youth intervention programs, violence prevention programs, and things like that. So
Mamaw, also, let's be honest, and maybe I've covered government and politics for way too long, but I always look at a political angle to things, and I don't know that Trump is hurt by making some move like this. I think with his base, this probably plays pretty well. Pritzker and the other Democrats, it probably plays well for them to stand up to Trump on these issues. But even more so, we're seeing fundraising that's going on. Even at the state GOP level, there is an effort, you reported on this, there is an effort to try to raise money to support what Trump is talking about here.
Yeah, the state GOP sent a fundraising email basically the same day, actually that night, that the Democrats had their big press conference in downtown Chicago, telling Trump, you know, we don't want you here. The same night, the state GOP sent out a fundraising email that basically said, you know, the left wants you to think that Trump is attacking Chicago, but we know the truth, and Trump is actually protecting Illinois families. And the messaging was very much that the left is going to spin this as an attack, but really Trump is looking after families and trying to restore order to these crime-ridden cities that under Democrat leadership. And, you know, every single dollar you donate will help us send that message that Illinois actually stands with Trump. And I think it's quite indicative of, you know, where the state GOP leadership thinks the state Republican Party is at, which is, you know, trying to sort of ride on the coattails of Trump's success nationally. You know, like I think the party itself is suffering under a lot of dysfunction. It's suffering from a lot of infighting. But having Trump as president has been like their sort of their prize, right, that they can sort of hold on to is like that this is our saving grace. But you know, like you said, it's both sides are somewhat guilty of this, right? You know, we have the Democrats, the Democrat leadership, who are saying too that, like, you know, Trump has no right to come here and all this stuff. But like theoretically, the state lawmakers and state officials can't really do anything. I mean, you have Attorney General Kwame Raoul who can fight this in court, right? If the National Guard actually does get deployed in Chicago, but in the meantime, the legislature, the governor, the lieutenant governor, they can't really do anything else about Trump sending in the military, except for what they said in the press conference, you know, raising awareness and talking to people about it, you know, making people, constituents, aware that this is happening. And I think one can interpret that to mean campaigning on it, you know, and potentially even using it as like a campaigning point, right? Like, this is how we fight back against Trump is, you know, we have to stand up and take a stand, and we'll do that with your money. So I wouldn't be surprised if I see the Democrats also taking this angle, using this as a fundraising opportunity. But yes, like you said, Sean, it's definitely with big flashpoint events like this, it's you often see, you know, political parties using it as like a big politicization moment. So.
Yeah. And Kent, I mean, this could very well be a dividing line when it comes to the next election, because people are maybe falling one side or the other. I even think maybe among some people in some low-income neighborhoods who have for years complained about crime rates and felt as though leadership has not done anything about it, some of them may welcome this type of move by Trump. So at least that's, I think, what Republicans are hoping for.
Yeah, no, obviously we're terribly polarized on a whole bunch of dimensions, you know, Democrat, Republican, urban, rural. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Nationally, it is a good issue for the Republicans because no one is pro-crime. I mean, you know, and you don't want to be put in a position where somebody is accusing you of being soft on crime or anti-police or whatever the right phrase is. Similarly, you know, if people in these are low-income, you know, depressed urban neighborhoods, black, white, Latino, you know, I mean, they're just areas that, you know, the residents rightly believe that, you know, they're not getting enough attention and that somebody should be talking about their problems. Now, keeping the National Guard permanently in place, not out, not in the Chicago Loop, but out in, you know, at the end, predominantly poor minority neighborhoods, you know, would not be a popular thing. You know, what they want is more police, more resources, better schools, more support for families, you know, crime prevention kinds of things. But, you know, when you have a policy discussion, you know, then the Democrats who tend to want to spend money to do things are probably in a better position. But, you know, this shock and awe kind of, at least somebody's doing something, you know, that has short-term currency. It doesn't, the money was going to be de minimis in terms of Illinois. I mean, the Republican, Illinois Republicans have no money. Their candidates have no money. They've lost their funding base along with a large part of their voting base. And so unless they get a financial angel, you know, if Ken Griffin or Richard Yulin wants to come back and support Republican Senate or gubernatorial candidate, you know, there's just not a lot that the Republicans can do to raise money because they've lost a whole chunk of their funding base. But it's short term, it's good politics, and it certainly helps reinforce the, you know, for the president, and it reinforces his base. The Democrats push back, but it's not their base they need to worry about. You know, they need to win back the votes they lost in the 2024 election. Trump had almost identical numbers this election as he did against Biden. Kamala Harris had almost 300,000 less votes than Biden did. So a lot of Democrats in Illinois stayed home. A lot of independents that voted Democratic stayed home. And so the Democrats, they need to have a message that speaks to the people that decided that it really wasn't worth their time to participate in the last presidential election.
Well, we'll talk more about the issues with the Chicago situation and whether or not we do see troops on the streets there in next week's show. But also wanted to save some time to talk about something the president mentioned this week. In fact, he's basically threatening states and primarily Illinois that have ended cash bail, talking about withholding federal funding from states like Illinois because of this. Mawa, what do leaders like Governor Pritzker have to say about this?
Like you said, President Trump signed an executive order earlier this week, basically saying, directing his cabinet to look at jurisdictions that have eliminated cash bail and see what sort of federal funds and grants they can revoke from these jurisdictions. So, of course, Illinois being one of them, being the only state that has totally eliminated the need for money when it comes to pretrial decisions, right? So for those who aren't familiar, when you are arrested and charged with a crime and you're presented before a judge for your pretrial hearing, under the old system, you would have to pay an amount of money to basically stay out of jail before your trial. What Illinois did a couple years ago was they passed a law that essentially took money out of the equation. So if you're someone who is charged with a lower level offense, you wouldn't have to, what a lot of advocates were saying, languish in jail because you were poor and couldn't afford bail. But of course, it still let judges decide, if you're someone who was charged with a very high level offense, like murder, for example, or if you were deemed a danger to the community or a flight risk, you would still be able to be detained. Like a judge could still order your detainment pre-trial. But so, you have a lot of Democratic lawmakers, state lawmakers, and the governor, who really push for this law to pass, saying that this is just another threat from the Trump administration and another instance where the federal government is targeting Illinois and targeting Chicago. And, as of now, it doesn't seem like that there have been funds that have actually been revoked from Illinois or grants that have been revoked from Illinois. But the Attorney General, of course, says if they do, then they will be launching a legal action against the federal government, which, of course, like we mentioned earlier, is not anything new for their office. That this would be just another one of the legal challenges that they are following. But yeah, it's, as of now, there hasn't been any movement. But it's one of those things like that this became a flashpoint issue during the midterms a few years ago when you had a lot of Republican conservative candidates saying that this law eliminating cash bail will, like we were talking about, increased crime and painting these Democrats as sort of being soft on crime, which as Kent said is very unpopular. And so it's bringing that debate back again, just in a very different way. And I think it'll be interesting to see, how this plays out in the midterms we have next year, where you do have Senator Robert Peters, who's a state senator, running for a congressional seat, and he's actually one of the lawmakers who is very, very, vocal and very at the forefront of pushing for this law to be enacted.
Yeah, Kent, this gets, like Mawa said, this gets back to the being tough on crime idea that the Trump administration has really glommed onto here. This seems to be the same situation going after something that has proven to be quite unpopular with conservatives, even some police groups and others. So probably no downside for Trump to pick this fight, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're again, you're reinforcing your base. The to make this system work, the system that we have in Illinois, that means a lot more work, and you need a lot more resources in the state's attorney's offices, and you need resources and support for judges, because instead of having kind of a menu up there of like ordering takeout in terms of this offense is worth X amount of money in terms of bail, you're supposed to be making, doing pretrial and investigations, and the state's attorney is supposed to be, saying, making the case, this is a dangerous situation. I mean, we're not, there's not a problem with that we're releasing somebody, that's a serial killer or something, but this is about making judgments about who's a threat, and so the state's attorney has to make the case, the judge has to make a finding, and the irony of this is that the money that would be taken away, I mean, you got to connect the money up to what you're complaining about. You wouldn't be cutting grants to for highway construction, you'd be cutting grants that are public safety kind of grants, resources that could be used to make the law more effective, and to take those federal funds and make the law work. So it's not a, and again, we don't know how serious this is. We also had a executive order on flag burning, and we throw these out without a lot of substance, just like we're making a list about, what exhibits are bad in the National Museum. And so, whether there's follow-through in this, nobody knows.
Just a few seconds here left. Mawa, the governor did sign some legislation here earlier this month. We didn't talk about it on the show, but tell us what this was about regarding college campuses.
Sure. So this started as a student movement from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, where a group of students passed out a election referendum, a student election referendum, to ask the school to support them or try to come up with ways to support students in accessing mifepristone, which is a common abortion-inducing medication. So that referendum passed, the students voted for it, overwhelmingly supported it, but the school said that they just don't have the resources or really like the in-house expertise to actually do this. So then they went to the state lawmakers, and now we have this new law, which basically directs all college campuses to have a way for students to access this drug, whether through the student health centers, via a health professional who's authorized to dispense this medication, or through their student pharmacy where they can access the drug as well.
Okay. Well, now time for our notes from the field, and Mawa will stick with you.
Yeah, so I've been working on this story where the Secretary of State has done this audit on Flock Safety. They're a leading tech company that contracts with a lot of police and law enforcement jurisdictions for license plate reader cameras. And so basically, the Secretary of State did an audit, and they say they found that, you know, the company was sharing data with Customs and Border Control, or Customs and Border Protection, I should say. Which would be violating state law if they were doing it for the purposes of enforcing immigration. But it is one thing I will say is, you know, they say that the reason why they can't release this audit for us journalists to look at it and for the public to read it is because the investigation into Flock is ongoing. But we reached out to Flock Safety, and they actually didn't know that there was an investigation happening. I tried asking the Secretary of State, you know, like who's doing the investigation? Is it a civil one or a criminal one? And they just were not giving very many answers. So I guess that is to be seen. I'm gonna see if I can try to get some answers through the Freedom of Information Act. So I'll keep you guys posted on what I can find.
All right. Well, now we'll go to Kent. Note from the field.
Earlier this summer, Ken Busby died, and he was a state senator from Carbondale, served about 5 or 6 terms in the General Assembly. You know, when I came here in 1975, he was pretty typical of a downstate Democrat. You had these districts that had a state senator and three representatives chosen by cumulative voting. And in the Carbondale area, they had a Democratic senator, and two of the three reps were Democrats. Labor was very important downstate at that time, lots of downstate manufacturing. You had about 10 downstate, what we'd really think of as downstate districts that had Democratic senators and Democratic, a majority of Democratic reps. Currently, we've got five, and you have to, you know, downstate Democratic districts, five or six, and you have to include Rockford and the Quad Cities in that. These are all basically urban areas. Generally, there's only one state representative. So there's been a dramatic shift in, you know, what was a downstate Democrat. You know, it used to fit kind of the rural or downstate image, and now these tend to be much more urban districts that have a lot more in common with northeastern Illinois than what they do with what we think about the old Democrats. So just another sign of, you know, how things have changed in Illinois politics.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Mawa Iqbal and Kent Redfield. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.